Hello and welcome to the Basement Shuffle. My name is Kevin. With me as always is Andy.
Hello, hello, how is everyone?
And once again, we're joined by Mike Dempsey.
Hello.
And we're continuing our last episode, Overrated, with Underrated. Song we listen to is called Pacer by The Amps. Andy, who was singing on that song?
Reminded me of The Breeders, so am I Kim Deal? Is that
you got name? It, man. Yeah. Unmistakable. Her voice is unmistakable. Her writing is phenomenal. That's a lady that can write a hook.
I agree.
This song because everybody knows the Pixies, everybody knows Breeders, like you said. Nobody knows about the Amps. This was, I don't know the history of this. I don't know if this was...
Was that before the Breeders or after the Breeders?
That's hard to say because I think the Breeders was sort of, that's the band that she has with her sister, and I feel like maybe that had been going on parallel to like the Pixies. I don't know, but this was after she left the Pixies.
Okay.
And it's...
Sounded pretty good.
I don't know if it's an album or an EP. It's not a very long album, if it is. But it's just nice, concise rock and roll songs that are catchy as shit. And yeah, man. I think she's underrated. Well, I think that band is
in
underrated.
That context, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that Kim Deal is underrated. I think a lot of people recognize that she was an amazing bass player, harmony singer for the Pixies. Everybody loves her.
Yeah, yeah, her voice.
And everybody loves the Pixies and everybody loves the Breeders, but I don't think a lot of people have heard the Amps. And you should check it out, people. So,
well said.
Her sister now was it I don't know if it was the name of the album or the band. It was like TK 6000 or something or other.
I don't know about this.
Or the Kelly Deal.
Yeah.
10,000 or something.
This is like Andre 3000.
Something like that.
This was her hip hop side project?
No, it was her other project outside of the Breeders, but I don't know if Kim Deal was on any of that or... Yeah, it gets hopped around, I guess.
We'll have to... Yeah, I've never heard of that. I'll have to check that out.
Or TK...
It's underrated.
Something like that. I'll have to look that. You made me think of it. TK 4000?
I'm going to have to research this.
Yeah, I'm
going
to have to Google this real quick.
Came out in the 90s, I imagine.
Yeah, after the Breeders stuff. So maybe Kim Deal wasn't part of that. I don't know if she was not doing anything at the time, but her.
Yeah. Well, I know that Kelly had some substance abuse problems around that time. So maybe she was, yeah, maybe she wasn't able to be in a touring band and kind of did.
Yeah, the Kelly Deal 6000. That was one of the other projects.
Okay.
After Breeders.
All right. Well, what is this number band you're talking about? TK?
Maybe that was the name of the album.
Oh, okay. But it's like Kelly Deal Band. He's looking it up, people. He's looking it up. The thing that I forbade Andy to do during the show, which I did not
maybe
forbid
the
you to do.
TK thing is something else. I don't know.
All right, but it's underrated, and we'll look it up later. Andy, man, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. We had the nice interview with James Ingram earlier,
mm-hmm.
and now we are doing a doubleheader. Our first.
Doubleheader, yeah.
Doubleheader.
Yeah, man.
And we're still going. We got plenty of beers, and we got some food on the way.
Oh, my God. I'm hungry, man. There we got some wings happening.
Hungry like the wolf?
Yes. Underrated. No, not underrated at all. Underrated.
Okay. Title TK is another Breeders album, I guess, when they rejoined or something.
All right.
Right, because so they did get back together at one time, too.
Yeah, they've kind of been off and on.
Their third album was called Title TK. That's what I was mixing up.
I want to say Pixies did that too.
Yeah, it was the Kelly Deal 6000.
But you remember liking her solo shit?
Most of what I know is just the Breeder stuff.
Okay.
But I do kind of remember
man, why do you bring it up?
Because I was getting them mixed up. I don't know.
Yeah, he got on the track of...
I'd never heard of them.
But
Deal
no,
Sisters.
The one you just played, yeah. That one, you're right.
Kicks ass.
Amp?
The Amps.
The yeah. Amps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never heard of them.
I think has Dave Lovering, the drummer from the Pixies, in it, and then I don't know who else is playing, like bass or guitar. I think she's playing guitar, but I don't know if they have an additional one. But anyway...
Was that
great
the drummer
rock and
from
roll.
The Pixies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
No, I thought it was a different dude.
Could be. I might be wrong. You're talking about In the Amps? Or you don't recognize the name Dave Lovering?
I thought it was a different name. That was the drummer of the Pixies.
No. I think it was Dave Lovering. I think. Well, you know... Yeah, I should lift the ban on researching stuff during the show.
No, you just brought something now my mind's wandering. Like, oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, man, we had a difficult time with Overrated. I did.
I think Overrated was probably harder of the two.
Yeah. But you feel like you nailed it, huh?
Overrated or underrated?
Overrated. We haven't done underrated. We're doing it now.
Well, yeah, but I know what songs I picked for underrated, and I think I did okay. I'm not sure if you guys are going to be happy, but
you usually do pretty good, man.
All right, thank you.
But yeah, man, these two topics are difficult because they're kind of open-ended, you know. You know, who's to say?
It's just an opinion, man. You know, it's just rock and roll, man.
It's fun.
We're just having fun with it.
And apparently, I forgot about this, but Andy has a game for us later on in the show.
Ha
ha. And I look forward to that. Let's play an Andy now. Let's play an Andy.
All right. Then let's lend a hand and bring you up to the vocal point. Man, I got the vocal joints. Cops all around me. Here annoying, there annoying. I love the blunts. 8-8 enough. I never get tired of smoking on that stuff until I fall down, yup. Hold it on the grass to keep from falling off the earth and busting my ass. Cause I'm the smoker, the joker, the midnight toker. I huff and puff till I was born like Oprah. Winfrey, the Sensi, was fucking out my dome. Hitting Buddha's push, yeah, the size of ice cream cones. Then to quench my thirst, I did the worst that I could do me. Hide with the odds, yeah, that shit do me. For a loss, cause I was praying to the porcelain god. I'll never drink again if I can make it out alive. I love to smoke the bonga. But that's my business. I love to tap the keg. But that's my business. From Philly with the
All right, man.
That is the Goats.
The Goats? It's the goat, isn't it?
The Goats. Plural.
Okay.
Is that,
And that song was called Got Kinda High.
What year is that song from? Like 89, 90, if I had to guess?
You're close. You're in the ballpark.
I'd say 92.
94.
Okay.
And they had a lot of samples. They played instruments kind of like the Beastie Boys, but they had more samples on this album. Their second album had more instruments. Didn't like it as much. This is from the album Tricks of the Trade.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's what it's called. And it's a political giant. I mean, what they say on this album, the entire album, it's like, it makes Rage seem like they're amateurs.
Oh, yeah?
Straight up, dude. Straight up. It's the most politically piece of artwork that I've ever enjoyed in my life. It's a great, great album. Really? Highly underrated because most people have just never heard of this group.
I mean, right off the bat, it sounds very influenced by Public Enemy. I'd say so. What would you say?
Only in the way that Public Enemy is hip-hop.
Okay.
I mean,
I think, yeah. Well, I said 89, 90. I guessed that for a reason.
Because that was the sound of Public Enemy at the time.
Okay. So I mean, okay, that's fine. Now, if you guys are feeling that, you know, I can get with that.
It sounded dope. But, yeah, it's just
it's
like,
good. It's probably
that. Yeah, that's
Public Enemy
that
vibe.
That type of drum break. That's mm-hmm. being sampled very, very Terminator X. But yeah, okay, so like what kind of stuff were they talking about? Were they talking about like
well, on this
anarchism?
Song, on this song, they're just talking about, look, if I want to pound 40s, that's my business. If I want to, you know, smoke dope, that's my business. You know, I'm not hurting no one. I'm doing my thing. Mm-hmm. And they're just, you know, yeah.
That does not remind me of Rage Against the Machine. Did they get a little more? I mean,
yes. Now you have to remember when this album came out, also. So at the time, this was Bush.
94 would have been Clinton, I think.
Clinton was in office, but when this was, it was put out. The ideas of the songs came when George Bush was still president.
All right.
And so there's references to him in there. And, there's, you know, like you said, the Kevin saw one of the tracks on there. It's a skit trap track like De La Soul does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Noriega's Coke Stand.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and they talk about if you were in politics, you know, around about this time, it's on that record. They talk about how the Indians' land was, you know, stolen from them, and how they were slaughtered, and just everything, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where were these guys from?
Not exactly sure. There's three of them. One guy's name is Odie. There's the M-A-double-D, and Swayzak.
That's where you got fucking Swayzak from. Yeah. I've heard you say
they
that before.
They mentioned Philadelphia in there.
Is that right?
During that track, and right. It kind of had that Philly hit.
Yeah,
what's the Philly hit?
Yeah,
it's like a. It's kind of like that. It's like the
like
Philly
a snare.
That's
sound.
It.
It's almost a snare.
Yeah,
and a really tight horn on top of it, and all it's right. like.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. But I think
on,
he
like,
was talking
digital
about
digital drum machines. It's called the Philly hit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that right. That's the
so
Philly.
It's like a horn blast and a drum hit at the same time.
Like yeah, like an
you just brought up. What is that that you just brought up? Dun 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 dun.
Poison.
Yes.
Poison.
Yes.
Poison.
Belle Biv DeVoe. Awesome. Fantastic. Let's.
If I had to guess, I'm not doing any research on that, but I'm gonna say Philly. But that, yeah, that's what it's like. It sounded like that error. So
mm-hmm. I hate to be racist, but white guys, black guys.
Is that racist?
One black, one white, and one Mexican.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on. All
it's
inclusive.
Not. It's a neat mix.
Not racist
so
at all.
Not. Well, check mark, no.
Good for me. I'll take credit for bringing that up. Anyway, let's do a mic, and it goes like this.
Yes, please.
I mean, do you have any kind of order that you want to do these, or just random?
Whatever.
Are you sure?
Sure. That all right. Doesn't matter.
Here it goes. Here goes a mic. That was SSQ with Anonymous. I'm going to say, just from my first impression, I've never heard that before. I like the song. I'm going to say that that is a band that's trying to sound 80s, but they're not 80s.
Right.
Yeah. Just, there's something about the production.
I would have guessed that too. And the production was the first thing that I was going to say.
Right.
So it's just boombastic. It's really good.
Yeah,
it's really raw, and that's early synth pop stuff, and so Stacy Q,
okay,
Two of Hearts,
yes,
yeah,
that's her first band, that's her singing.
What's the band called?
SSQ.
Wow.
So wait,
blew my mind.
I said that it was a band that is recent that's trying to sound 80s.
No,
but you're telling me that this
from
is
their early 80s.
Gotcha.
What's funny is how I learned about them is I actually knew them from a 80s movie called Return of the Living Dead, Part 2. Remember the graveyard?
If there's a song in a movie, I challenge you to play it for Mike, and he'll tell you what movie it's in.
What's funny is that song is called Tonight We'll Make Love Till We Die, and the girl gets all horny. She's punk rocker. They're zombies. They're in a cemetery party, and she jumps up on top of a tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
Gets naked and starts dancing.
That's the song that's playing then is Party. Party Time.
It's called Tonight We'll Make Love Till We Die.
But the words are party.
It's like, no. Different song, but when it's like, there's a part like,
I thought that was Grave 45
that's
or
not
45
a great
Grave.
Song. It's like, we would have to look at the soundtrack.
Yeah.
But, so one of their songs was used in that movie. Not a great song. Then years later, I watched a movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Uh-huh.
They played that song during the credits. And I'm like, dude, what is this? Sounds awesome. Same thing. I was like, oh, because it's kind of like a retro stylized movie. It's a newer movie done in
right.
the 70s, 80s, it's the guy that directed Mandy with
yes.
Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. So it's got that old school style. So the song fits perfectly. I'm like, well, what song was that? Who the hell did that? Same thing. I was like, oh, my God, this is actually from the early 80s, and they were one of the first synth-pop L.A. bands. And the guys used to wear, like, jumpsuits, like a pit crew.
Mm-hmm.
And like NASCAR patches, but all their patches were of like Yamaha and Korg and Roland. Like they had all these logos and stuff.
Yeah.
But she was a very young, attractive girl with a nice voice.
Yeah.
All the pop stuff was coming on. It was kind of like, hey, we can, there's more for you to come do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way over
and
there.
And it kind of ended up splitting their band up. But it's just like, as far as like the synth pop stuff, but that album there's SSQ. It's a really good album.
Hmm.
It's like, there's maybe two songs are like, eh, but the rest of it is actually incredible.
It sounded great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's why, I think that's why I liked it is because the voice was nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
So that's Two of Hearts. Two of Hearts.
Right. Come that's
on,
her.
Come on.
The favorite movie that I have that features that song is Hot Rod. Has anybody seen Hot Rod?
Yes.
With Andy Samberg.
Yes.
And Danny, what's his name?
I am so lost when it comes to movies, man.
Well, you should check out Hot Rod if you want to chuckle.
All right. Did
so
you
that
ever...
was SSQ, Stacy Q. That was, she's very young. That was her first band.
What does the extra S stand for?
I don't know what the SS, the Q is.
Sexy.
Sexy. Synthesizer.
Yeah.
Synthesizer,
well,
Stacy Q.
That was their whole thing. It's like, no, we're going to be a synthesizer band. And that's like, you know, when you first had the people cropping up. But it was not just like, you know, they really actually knew how to kind of like dial in patches and create sounds. And what's cool, before anything ever turned into techno, it still had that pop song structure.
Okay.
I mean, if you change all those synthesizers to like washed out guitars, that's like a shoegaze song.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, so that's
he
what you
said it!
What, shoegaze?
I said it for
he said it!
There you
go. Oh!
But that, I mean, you know what I mean? That could sound like,
yeah, My Bloody or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, just the tempo it's being played at, the arrangement and all that stuff.
But
so,
you're saying this is like one of the first, like, electro-punk? Or what would you call it?
Just synth-pop, really.
Synth-pop.
It's just kind of pure.
Whereas before,
I mean, there was
you would
other
have
stuff
had
happening at the same time, but yeah, you know, it's very kind of LA, very synth sounding and this and that.
But like before, you would have had at least like a real drum set or a real guitar or something in there. These guys were doing.
Yeah, there was usually one or two things, but yeah, that whole thing was kind of like.
Like it's a drum machine and synths, and that's it. It's all electric. I mean, all digital. Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. Good song. Good song. Yeah. So
that was a good song, Mike.
We did a mic, and let's take a little break.
Started when the freaking began, when everyone was so happy to be there, it took me away, it pinned me to the spot. When the music started, when the freaking began, when everyone was so happy to be there, it brought it home. It was so unlike home. It spun me around, hit me how I breathe. It left me stranded, it took me away, it pinned me to the spot. Jump up.
So that was David Grubbs, everybody. David Grubbs, for those that don't know,
is underrated.
Is underrated. He was in a band with another guy that I played on the show. I think the episode was C that we did with Mark Raymond. I played...
get back to it, Joe.
I played Jim O'Rourke, and he was in a band with David Grubbs called Gaster Del Sol. I think that's how it's pronounced. Anyway.
I remember that.
Yeah. Nobody ever talks about David Grubbs. David Grubbs is... Chicago underground music legend as well. And I think he's a really underrated songwriter as well as an underrated guitar player. I love that fucking guitar part.
I was noticing that too.
I like the guitar. What I noticed was the bass. He would like play that little and then he'd stop and there's no bass.
Well, it's probably not him playing it. I don't know who's playing it.
Well,
might be.
I'm just saying the bass line in itself.
Uh-huh.
I liked it. It was kind of short and choppy.
Okay.
And very innovative, I would say.
I thought what the levels. I like kind of like the way each level was mixed on each instrument. Like his vocals seemed very separate. Like okay. Here's something from something else laid on top of
so
this.
So the production.
Right. As far as... Yeah, the way they sounded like pieces interacting. Rather, you know, some like production, this and that. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, all this sounds like it goes together.
Mm.
Where each part, you know, still felt very separate.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Where it's almost like, you know, like the bass had its own kind of production, you know, philosophical type of approach to it. And that we're going to do our vocals like this.
Mm.
You know, rather than trying to make all of it sound like the same type of production, it sounded like lots of separate.
Huh. So you're saying, like, it kind of sounds, to you, it sounds like all the different instruments were, like, recorded, like, without hearing the other instruments?
Almost like, no, we're just going to worry about this part and how do we think this part sounds really good.
Mm.
But yeah, not in relation and necessarily, and it still works together. Not saying that's what they did,
mm-hmm.
But it's like it does sound like each part sounded very distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
from all the other parts.
Some bands record like that,
right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, but that's what I was noticing about it.
Hmm. Yeah, very, very cleanly produced. Yeah, probably everybody was fucking separated very nicely, and. Yeah, just the way. Yeah, I agree, man.
What year is that, Kevin? Roughly,
I'm gonna say.
I mean, I don't need the exact year. Just you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna say early 2000s.
Okay.
Yeah,
and that all blends together, doesn't it?
Yeah,
those early 2000s sometimes just blend together.
Yeah. Yeah, man. We're old now, man. Is well, what a, that was what old. 20 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we are.
I'm better.
Let's say it was put out in 2001. That's 20 years ago, man. Jesus Christ, it's a whole fucking. That's two decades ago.
What?
I mean, I'm sorry to blow your mind, but that's how it works. You have 10 years. That's a decade.
What?
Then you have another 10 years.
That's two
that's
decades.
That's 20 years.
My God. Oh my God.
Speaking of that,
I gotta lay down. I gotta lay down.
Speaking of that production style, I think I've heard a story about how Under Pressure came together. Is that like neither David Bowie or Freddie Mercury like heard each other? They just kind of did their own thing. Like Freddie did his part. And then, without listening, David did his part. I guess
if that's true, that's fucking incredible.
Yeah,
that can't be true.
It can't be true. Well, they would have to at least have like a blueprint of how the song goes.
They had sex first, so they knew what each other were thinking.
Yeah, it gave them that cosmic bond.
Yes. Oh.
But I've heard that story before, is that somehow they weren't listening to each other and they just gave
that's a fucking ridiculous.
Fantastic performance.
But that does sound like, because a lot of, like the same thing I was talking about, is like a lot of the Bowie stuff does sound like that, where it's almost, it's like, we're just doing this guitar right now.
Mm.
How can we make this guitar sound really cool or really interesting? We're just doing these vocals right now. It seems like very concentrated. You know what I mean?
Okay, if we're talking Bowie, let's take Heroes as an example.
Right.
I mean, that guitar part with Robert Fripp playing that. Yeah, that was definitely fucking. I mean, they had to have like labored over that for fucking hours.
Right. Also, just this sounds really cool. How do we make it work?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, but yeah, there's a lot of that, like, kind of like in Bowie's music, and that's what makes him so eclectic and so, like, kind of groundbreaking in so many different times during his career. It's like,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of that in Queen's music, too.
Yeah.
Recently, I watched this movie that they had done about Queen. I forget. I don't know if it's, if the movie's just called Queen, but.
Biopic? Is that what you're talking about?
Biopic.
They were showing them recording Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, yeah.
Rohemian.
Bohemian.
Have another beer, man.
Okay.
But I had never seen this movie in the theaters, and a lot of people that I know, not just Queen fans, said, dude, this movie's good. Watch it.
Okay.
And so anyway, I was impressed when I watched this movie. I thought it was pretty good. And they were showing the recording of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
And it was just take after take after take. The only one really that they kind of left alone was Brian May on his guitar solo.
Okay.
That's pretty crazy.
Because he's money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody sounds
you
like
talk about underrated. I think Brian May is underrated.
Because you don't hear.
I think he gets his just due.
I think he does. But you won't see him like on a lot of like. Best guitar
you
player
hear,
list.
Yeah, man. You hear
because he's
anyone
included
and everyone,
in the greatest band.
Right.
I just don't think you hear his name. You could walk up to a lot of people and say, yeah, do you know who Brian May used to play for?
No, it's
they're not going to be able to tell you.
Because I know all this other stuff about the guy.
You
has
do,
to do
because
with
you are a music fanatic. Like
no, I'm
Kevin
not.
And I. Yes, you are.
I just play Nintendo.
So anyway, you brought up the bass part of this David Grubb song, and I'm not for certain, don't quote me on this, but it might be the same guy that plays for this band.
He's doing back to back.
My God.
Right there.
Testify by 11th Dream Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I said that might be the same bass player is because that's another Chicago band from the same scene, the underground music scene of Chicago. I know that dude that plays bass in that band, 11th Daydream, plays bass in Tortoise, Brokeback, all kinds of other.
Wow. Everybody, I did not know he was in Tortoise.
It's a very incestuous scene. Yeah. Yeah. That's because it's, you know, 11th Dream Day is very much kind of pop oriented rock, whereas Tortoise is sort of more experimental. It doesn't sound the same, but yeah, same dude. Yeah, man. Tell us
so
about that.
That group was going to be on my list for overrated. And I started to do some research on them and really listen to some of their older music. They have an album out, and I don't know the name of the album. I have it. It was my introduction into 11th Day Dream. And it was their major label debut. And it came out sometime after Nirvana. Never mind.
Sorry, go ahead.
Movie. So, Mike is looking up info. So the album came out after Nirvana got signed.
Okay.
And there was a slew of bands that got signed after them.
Sure.
I remember Screaming Trees got signed to a major label. 11th Day Dream got signed to a major label. MTV was like big and boisterous, and they had all these indie rock bands, some that should not have gotten signed to a major label.
Sure.
And I thought 11th Day Dream was one of those bands. So I go back and I start listening to their earlier stuff, and I was like, well, now this is phenomenal. This is pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought that last, this track that we just played by them was really good. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to put them on underrated. And there we go. That's my story.
Awesome, man. Why would you have put them on overrated?
Like I said, I can't even, I should look it up, but my phone's way over there. Name the album that they came out with. But I remember going to Tower Records, and I remember spending $15 on this CD, and I remember listening to it and hating it.
Okay.
And I thought it was overproduced, and I was just like, there's nothing cutting edge here. You know? Whereas, like, if you listen to that, you know, this last track, I think there's some cutting edge stuff going on there.
That's interesting. I've you know, since I was a fan of Tortoise and stuff like that, I heard about 11th Day Dream and read about them and stuff like that. I got an album by them, and I was not impressed. Yeah. But they've been around. They're like a Chicago staple.
For a long time, yeah. Which 80s. I didn't know either.
Yeah. So I think it really has to, I think it really depends on where you jump in on that band. They just actually, they recently put out a new album.
And I saw that too. I started to stream it, but I said, well, let me go back to their earlier stuff first, and then I'll check this out later. But yeah, they've been around for a long, long time.
Husband and wife team, am I right?
You got me on that, Kevin. Okay. I'm not really sure.
Anyway, good song, man.
Mike, had you heard of them?
No.
What'd you think?
Sounded okay. Yeah, I liked it.
Cool. All right.
But no, I've never listened to any of their stuff.
Hey, this is Kevin. How you guys doing? I just wanted to remind you guys that the Basement Shuffle Shop is still up and open. Go to kdj432.threadless.com to get all your Basement Shuffle podcast needs met. T-shirts, mugs, all of it. Check it out.
Here's another one from Mike.
Yeah.
Jim Carroll Band with Love Crime.
Man, that dude's voice sounds so familiar.
Love Crimes. Why?
Like he was in another band.
Nope.
You've heard people who've died. That's we could play it for you. You didn't recognize it earlier when I mentioned it, but you've heard it.
Huh.
Because it's the only song anybody's heard by him, and that's why he's underrated.
My bad. Yeah.
That was Patti Smith singing with him also on that.
Oh, the backgrounds? No shit. Yeah.
Fascinating. What year is that, Kevin?
Oh,
that one's 83.
Whoa, that old?
Yeah. I think that one's 83.
Hmm. No, I wouldn't have guessed that. Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty cool song.
Yeah, I was debating on whether or not using him because in certain circles, he's known about. But basically, not that album. He's got three albums and a pseudo album he did in the 90s, about 97-ish, that went nowhere.
No, I think that's perfect for underrated, though, because everyone doesn't know who that is.
Most people have heard people who've died.
Here it comes.
Uh-oh. Jettison had a clue, he was 12 years old. Fell from the roof on East 29. Kathy was 11 when she pulled the plug. 26 reds and a bottle of wine. Bobby got leukemia, 14 years old. He looked like 65 when he died. He was a friend of mine. Those are people who died. Those are people who died.
Say, he's nodding his head now.
You remember that, Andy?
I didn't recognize it until the chorus, but right. Yeah, I've heard it before. Yeah.
That's the one song everybody's heard from him. If you've heard a song from him, it's that one. If you've heard an album from him, it's the album that song's from, Catholic Boy's first album. Mm. And that's about it.
I actually like that other song better.
I like that song a lot. I just wanted to point out, it's if you ever dug deep, and it took me forever because you know, they had the movie in the 90s, The Basketball Diaries, and they made a video and they used that song. That song is probably about 15 years old at the time, maybe even longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, it's cool, but even at that point, I never went and listened to his other stuff.
Right. And we're absolutely sure that this guy never played in another band.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was more known as a poet and a writer and a junkie.
Okay, I'm going to fact check that.
Mm-hmm. It's but he did his first album was Catholic Boy, and then he did a second album, Dry Dreams, which from the last thing I've heard was never even released on CD. That was in the early 80s, maybe 82. So about 80, 82, 83, did about three albums. That song was from his third album, and that album was actually on Atlantic Records. But I don't think he much worked as a musician or toured it much as a musician.
Hmm. Yeah, he was more of a poet, writer, like you said.
Right.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah.
But he wrote the Basketball Diaries where they made that DiCaprio movie in the...
yeah, you were telling me about that.
Right, in the 90s or whatever. Marky
Mark.
So a little bit of bump of that. So last night when I was debating and I was listening to some songs, I was debating even selecting him. I was like, well, some people know about it, but his stuff's never been on the radio. Mm-mm. But that one song, People Who Died, that
was definitely
pops up
played
from time to time.
Now I'm sure they play that on like WHFS or something like that.
Yeah, during like once or twice. The 90s, like when that movie came out, and that was about it. And that's when I first heard his stuff. But it actually went later. And
it's a shame that station had to go away.
But he was a contemporary of like that 70s like original punk scene in New York, right?
Right, yeah. So like, you know, he covered Lou Reed and Lou Reed covered him. They played songs together. I mean, he knew all those people.
And that explains why Patti Smith is on.
He was a world class
yeah.
New York junkie, poet, all that, and did spoken word stuff. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think he was on the MTV spoken word unplugged thingy and
get out of town.
Yeah. So it's like nobody ever, for some reason, and it's like People Who Die is a really great song.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and I'm, like I said, I've probably even on here before, is that I'm not a big lyric guy. his lyrics are kind of the shit. Awesome. But it's that dark,
yeah,
old school New York. I mean, that song is about, I don't know if you're paying much attention to the lyrics there, Andy, but they're pretty dark lyrics.
All right, tell us.
Well, it was basically about a young man turning tricks.
Oh, okay. Like the Ramones, 53rd and 3rd.
Drug habit, yeah. Right. Just make sure your underwear is clean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're that the people who died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people who died is like, yeah, all the kids he grew up with and listing the various ways they died. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got some dark themes.
He was living a dark life, yeah, and yeah. That's kind of like why he got popular. He wrote a book as a very young man.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of ironic. That
70s Manhattan experience. Yeah. Well, he was a teenager. It's not the Bed Bath & Beyond Manhattan that it is today. It was the 1970s Manhattan. It was absolute terrifying shit.
New York was way different.
Right. Super, super scary. So if you're a kid from Manhattan growing, but and you're a teenager in 1970s,
New York's all right.
Just doing average. Like it's like I don't have a bad kid. I don't really have a good kid. Just the average kid that's going to get in some trouble. The some trouble you would get into at that time point,
mm-hmm,
in that history, in that place. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like you said, it was a fucking shithole, man. It was like the apocalypse. I mean, bombed out buildings. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know. I didn't live there.
All right. You guys want to try this?
No, not yet. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, Andy has a game, and it should be fun.
Oh,
stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
Okay.
Heisman Sports Bar, where champions come to drink. We offer the cleanest bathrooms in Ripley. No fake ID needed if you run your own door. Bar stools reserved for anyone who hates original music. The county's largest pole placed directly in front of the stage, perfect for dancing. Heisman Sports Bar. Come for the drafts. Leave with the drips. Come on down to Heisman Sports Bar, your bar for smoldering entertainment, inconveniently located off of Route 225.
Hi, this is Byron Biggie B here, and we're going to do Star Trek or NFL player. So, I have a list of 8 people here. Your job is to tell me, is this a Star Trek character or is it an NFL player?
Okay.
Could be from the past, could be from the present, but it ain't from the future. Are we ready? Okay, name number 1, William Ross. William Ross.
Hold on a second. Are we supposed to buzz in or just answer?
No, you can both answer.
I'm going to say NFL.
I'm going to go with Star Trek.
Admiral William J. Ross took command of operations during the Dominion War during the Battle of Cardassia, Deep Space Nine. That's one for Mike.
Son of a bitch.
And Kevin, you are at 0 still. Name number 2. Travis Mayweather. Travis Mayweather.
Absolutely NFL.
Since I'm up by 1, I'm going to hedge my bet and just say NFL.
And serving as navigator and helm officer aboard the Starship Enterprise, portrayed by Anthony Montgomery. Neither one of you get one.
That's what I figured.
Name number three.
I'm just trying to win.
Jim Ringo. Jim Ringo.
Star Trek.
NFL.
NFL Hall of Hall of Fame center for the Green Bay Packers.
Son of a bitch.
11 seasons, 1953 to 1964. Finished his career in Philadelphia with the Eagles. That's score two for Mike. Kevin, need you to step it up, buddy.
Don't.
I'll try my best. I don't know either of these subjects. Go ahead.
Right. Name number four. Luther Sloan. Luther Sloan.
Star Trek.
I'll go Star Trek.
24th century human operative from the Intel Agency Section 31.
Hell
Shell
yeah.
Deep Space Nine.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Creeping
Kevin
up.
Got one. But Mike got one too, so it kind of stays even. All right. Name number five. John Mackey.
That's
John
NFL.
Mackey.
NFL.
We both said NFL.
NFL.
Oh, you both said. Oh, okay, all right. I didn't hear you, Kevin. Sorry. 1963 to 1971, tight end for the then San Diego Chargers.
Booyah.
In 10 seasons in the NFL, this person only missed one game.
Okay.
That's not bad.
This is when I win it, people. No, I have to tie, don't I?
All right.
Hold on. Mike has 1, 2, 3, 4, and I have 2?
Yes, sir.
Bullshit.
I'm hedging my bets.
Okay.
If I'm not sure,
you got
I just
William
go with
Ross
you.
Incorrect. You got Travis Mayweather incorrect.
Okay.
You
Hit
have
me.
Two.
Hit me.
All right. Name number six. Malcolm Reed. Malcolm Reed.
I'm going Star Trek.
I'll go Star Trek.
Armory officer aboard the Enterprise in charge of security, Malcolm Reed.
Hell yeah. Put that point on there.
Bam! 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 All right, so, Kevin, you got to get these next two right and hope that Mike gets
I'm not going to go against
wrong.
What he says at this point.
Okay.
If he's wrong, we're both wrong. You should make me go first.
Is that...
We can do that.
Is that valid? All right.
I don't know. All right. Just give me a chance. Maybe we'll tie.
Name number seven. Frank Cope. Frank Cope.
Michael?
Could I get a spelling on Cope, please?
C-O-P-E. Cope.
Frank Cope. Star Trek.
NFL.
And you should have known this. Star lineman played for the New York Giants.
There you go.
From 1938 to 1947 as left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Bam! Kevin's creeping up.
Gains a point. There you go.
All right.
Worst case scenario.
Could be a tie.
I tie.
All right.
Captain.
Name number eight. This is the last one. Kevin Riley. Kevin Riley.
Go ahead.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
From Star Trek, the original series, served aboard the USS Enterprise as one of the ship's navigators.
Andy, you're not going to tell me that that's the end of the fucking list. Are you?
Yeah, that's the end. This was a quick game, dude. How long was it supposed to go on?
All right, you're right. There has to be an end to
the game. The song's 8 minutes. We did 4 minutes.
Just like I said.
All right. Fine.
All right, I'll do 10 next time. So... We have Mike in with 6 and Kevin in with 5. Winner, Mike Dempsey.
Okay, bonus for Kevin. Captain Munnerlin.
Captain Munnerlin?
Yeah, Captain Munnerlin.
Is either NFL or Star Trek?
Yeah.
NFL.
Yeah, that's good. That was the easy one because...
Why is that easy?
Because it was too obvious.
His name's Captain.
It was too obvious.
Somebody named their child Captain.
Wow!
Yeah.
Like Captain and Tennille.
Okay.
And Munnerlin.
Bonus.
Yes.
Sabby Piscatelli.
NFL.
Okay, there you go. Come now on. Or even.
That sounds Italian.
There you go. Sabby Piscatelli.
And we've just done our first installment of Trek or NFL.
It sounds like somebody that Tony Maselli would have played with on the... Who was the baseball team that he played for and who's the boss?
Yeah. Sam Malone played for the Sox.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think...
Tony Maselli did not make the pros.
Yeah, he did not. Mm-hmm. He was like Rochester...
Little League.
Yeah, Blue Hens or
yeah,
something
yeah,
like
he
that.
Was in the farm team.
All right, so we're going to get back to...
Good game, man.
Thank good you, game. Guys. Thank you guys for being good sports.
Well done.
I wanted to do that because Doug had done that on an episode.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just so much fun, so I just wanted to throw that in like really quick.
What was it, Grease or...
Slick Rick.
Or hip-hop lyrics or something.
Slick Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and he was going to throw in...
I got 100% on that. That's kind of embarrassing because I actually knew that one better than I knew the NFL or Star Trek.
Yeah. And he was going to throw in Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet, but he didn't have time.
Yeah, there you go.
But I had a hard time with that because I wasn't familiar with either of those either. I'm not a big Grease
fan.
We
both did, and because I didn't know that Grease had like lyrics that were like...
Nasty.
Yeah. Very dirty. Surprisingly.
Mike is very familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's dirty.
Yep.
He had a little sister.
Dirty Mike.
Right. That's the thing. If you had a younger sister, it's like, okay, it's her turn. So you know Dirty Dancing. You know Grease.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kevin, we're up to your song now?
Yes, sir. Here we go. Like picture pages. That's my choice.
Well, now that I'm depressed, do you want to tell me about it?
Well, okay, yeah, I do like sad songs. I do.
That was very depressing.
You stopped that?
Right after the...
I did stop it. I'm gonna explain why.
Okay.
Please explain.
Well, I'm not gonna explain.
I tapped you on the shoulder to tell you.
I know.
Play
the whole thing.
Yes, play the whole thing.
Right on. You and I are fans. Do you know who that is, Andy?
I'm going to take a stupid guess and say Michael Frusciante.
You mean John?
John.
It's a good guess.
yeah. You got him mixed up with what is Flea's actual name? Michael something.
Balzeri.
Yeah.
That's for the rest of the song. It's. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. That's John Frusciante from Red Hot Chili Peppers. I chose that song. Because motherfucker moves me, man. You're right. I do like sad songs. And that's a great fucking sad song. How about the production on that? How about the reverse delay and shit like that?
Well, he did the thing that Phil Collins did on Air of Night.
What's that?
You remember him?
Yeah. I hear you.
Vocals. That's what. That's the first thing that it reminded me of.
Okay. Not bad. Not a bad reference. Yeah, man. Everybody knows Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course.
Everybody knows Michael Frusciante.
John.
But no one knows John Frusciante. At least I don't.
That's his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the reason people know Red Hot Chili Peppers is because of this guy. The guitar player from Red Hot Chili Peppers from 89, I think, until now, it was this guy. And I think the reason that they got so popular, and I'm just going to generalize here and say that most people know this band from, like, when they were on MTV with, like, Under the Bridge and shit like that. And that was the album Blood Sugar Sex Magik. And I think that this is where this cat came into his own.
Well, I'd Give It Away also.
Yeah, Give It Away. That's on that album as well.
God, I played that song so much I started hating it.
Yeah. Now, take fucking Anthony Kiedis out of that band and just listen to the music and, like, the harmonies and shit like that. That's good shit. When you take away the blick-a-dack-a-down, ba-bam-ba-doom-gong-gong, then you have a good band.
But it's not the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But they got a good fucking bandmate in this cat. John Frusciante. And I'm going to say that his solo efforts are way more interesting than Chili Peppers. And I chose that song, I guess, because the Empyrean is probably his most poppy album. And I would have chose another song off of that called Song to the Siren, but that's a cover. So this is like one that he wrote, and I think it's really fucking good. Now, so that's how that song begins.
Okay. This is what I was wondering. I was like, are you going to play the rest of the song so Andy can really appreciate it?
I should have started with this, but like you mentioned, Michael Balzari is on this record.
I don't know. I think he's on this record. I don't think it's him. I don't think it's him.
You don't think it's Flea playing bass on this?
Is this Darklight?
Yeah. No?
We'll look it up afterwards.
Okay, here we go. Kind of takes a while until the badass bass line takes it.
Play the whole thing.
Here it comes.
Anywho.
What do you think? I think he's very talented, but yeah. I think that Chili Peppers would have been fine if Hilo Slovak, which
people... Hilo Slovak, yeah.
Had not have passed, and they would have just, you know, gone on to bigger and better things. The band would have been definitely different. But timing was everything with Chili Peppers also.
Okay.
And when I say that, I mean, like, MTV was, like, plastering, you know, this band, you know, showcasing this band big time. Mm. And, you know, videos just made record sales go through the roof. I mean, Huey Lewis and the News.
Sure.
Great band. MTV made them bigger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they made so many other bands bigger.
Okay.
And so, you know, yeah, it was, I think that if you were to line them up, yeah, he's got more talent than Hilo.
John does. Okay.
But I would have to disagree to say that the Chili Peppers would not have gone on to bigger and better things with him. He was a good guitarist in his
with
own
who?
Way. Hilo Slovak.
Right. So you're proving my point, right?
You said the Chili Peppers would have been nothing without
John. Yeah.
And I disagree.
No, I think they were what they were pre-John. And then John came on Mother's Milk, but a lot of that was still based on the work Hillel did.
Right.
Blood Sugar. So, you, like, on Blood Sugar, there's Breaking the Girl, that mm-hmm. song. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get that with the previous guy.
Mm-mm.
That song will never be written without Frusciante.
Correct.
And then so him to leave, come back, and then the Snows and the Stadium Arcadium, they never would have gotten to that point. I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, I don't think so. They would have
very tight, and they were very unique for what
funky,
they were doing.
White
very
guys,
funky.
Yeah.
They had, like, George Clinton produced what their, I guess, their second album.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So if you take,
they were very kind of like in and of their time at that point,
and very much in their own niche, just the funky white guy punk aesthetic. And then this guy comes in and introduces, like, 70s fucking middle-of-the-road rock, like Elton John and
right.
just
harmony
and
yeah.
melody that just launches them into the stratosphere, is what I think happened.
So if you take Beastie Boys' first album and compare it to... what's the one with Sabotage on it? Check the Rhyme, or what was it?
Check Your Head.
Check Your Head.
Sabotage was on Ill Communication.
No, it was on Check Your Head.
Okay.
Either of those two.
At any rate, one has mega samples and, you know, drum machines and stuff like that, and one has live instruments.
Yeah.
And it's still the Beastie Boys.
Okay.
They still have that signature sound.
Right.
I think the same thing could have happened with the Chili Peppers. We're all speculating, myself included, because we don't know what could have really happened with Hilo Slovak had he have stayed in the band.
True.
We just don't know. It's all speculation.
Yeah,
it's an opinion.
Sitting there talking about
true
tendencies. But, like, if you listen to a lot of Frusciante solo work.
Right, and which is why I play this song.
He will recycle lots of things.
Mm.
He has purely 100% electronic songs that sound like John Frusciante songs. If you know him as a just his chord progressions, his tempos, his key changes, like the area he can sit there and do on synthesizers and drum machines, the same thing he does on a guitar. And it's like, whether you like the electronic stuff or not, whatever, but there he does have a characteristic and a lot of melodies where
it always sounds like him.
Where it's like, it still sounds like him.
His personality.
Whether his vocals are on it, but I don't know enough where there's early Chili Pepper records where it's like, now they're very distinctive and they broke out on that, you know. And their big breakout to me wasn't Blood Sugar. It was Mother's Milk. That would, to me, I would consider their big breakout album.
Fight Like a Brave.
You know,
that's not
Taste of Pain. Taste of Pain. Yeah. And,
ooh, my bad.
The cover of Higher Ground, which is an amazing cover. That's a fantastic.
Ilya Slovak was on Fight Like a Brave.
If You See Me Getting High.
Right. Yeah. So that was like the first one I was exposed to, but like Blood Sugar, it was like, then they paired up with Rick Rubin.
Well,
that was for Shawnee songwriting.
Right. To me, Blood Sugar was their highest point, if you will.
Sure.
There's a word for that, but I can't think of what it's called now.
Yeah. But see, like,
masterpiece.
We all grew up listening to that, and that Kevin and I were in high school when that album came out. Yeah. So we were kind of supposed to like it. Mm. And it was fine. And I never really listened to, a whole lot of Chili Peppers much after that album.
I think a lot of people didn't.
But I haven't stopped listening to Frusciante.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, his Stadium first... Arcadium and all that stuff came out.
Well, and let's face it, though, also, you guys are Anthony Kiedis haters.
I'm not even a hater.
Not a hater.
Just
he's annoying.
Kevin, you said get him out of the band.
He's annoying.
It's just kind of limited. He's just limited.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Listening to both of those songs that you guys just played, Frusciante's voice is gold.
Did you just say both of those songs?
It's like, but
that's the same song.
Well, okay. What I'm saying is both of those parts.
Yeah.
His voice, you know, compared to Anthony Kiedis, yeah. But again, like I say, it wouldn't be the Chili Peppers without Anthony Kiedis.
No, absolutely not.
Like Frusciante will like maximize. It's like, and he doesn't have a traditionally great. And we're not listening to Roy Orbison from either.
He's
guy.
Got a pretty good voice. I would say it's his voice is better than Anthony Kiedis.
Operatic, I would say.
But
especially,
I feel
song.
Like he could lend himself and his doing the harmonies and the backups and writing wise to kind of benefit Kiedis. Listen to Kiedis's vocals on anything pre Blood Sugar. Mm-hmm. And then Blood Sugar post, it's like whether he's great or not, whether you can stand his voice or not, it doesn't matter. It's becomes more dynamic, you know. It becomes more. It's like, well, we can get this song and write this song into what you can do.
And this is what I'm saying.
But he's got a very
influenced,
distinctive voice.
By Kat, our friends Kat and Garth are leaving right now, and they're sitting door waving goodbye. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying. You guys are maybe looking at it one way, that Frusciante influenced Chili Peppers to write better songs.
Yeah.
But it goes both ways. Chili Peppers influenced Frusciante, and Mike just said that after Blood Sugar, he was a little bit different. And so, you know, they intertwined and influenced each other.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was an 18-year-old kid when he joined the band. That was his favorite fucking band.
Right.
And he lucked out into replacing his guitar hero in that band.
And they lucked out with us like, holy shit, we just found a super genius.
Yeah. That's what we're saying. This cat is a fucking genius.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you.
If they had treated him like Metallica treated Newstead or whatever.
Yeah.
There would have been no Blood Sugar. There wouldn't have been no Stadium Arcadiums or any of those albums.
They didn't put the ringers on them. Mm-hmm. Hey, hold up, man.
No, they realize it's like...
Man, we don't write no songs like that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and of course, Flea's an amazing bass player. Mm-hmm. Knows musical theory inside out. They have a great freaking drummer and just like, oh, we can get shit done. This dude is bringing stuff that they're smart enough, intelligent enough to recognize. And like, no, we're going to start... writing songs this way. Not
right.
Funk,
I agree with that.
Funk, punk, fast.
Right, because that's like, limited.
Right.
Yeah, this like, cat can bring us into mainstream consciousness. Anyway, you brought up that might not be Flea on bass on the second half of that song?
I will have to go check my notes.
Do you know differently?
I believe it might be Frusciante playing bass on
that
as well.
Wow. Which is, I mean, makes sense. I'm sure he's been influenced by his brother, fucking Flea.
Michael Frusciante.
Michael Frusciante. Yes.
Yes, that guy.
John Belzari.
I wish I was Michael Frusciante.
Yeah. Okay. I'm willing to believe that. Dude, that bass line
because,
is
no, that's immediately what
so
everybody said.
Killer.
Or like, that's Flea, right? Because yeah. He did the album Shadows Collide with People.
Okay.
And that's very straightforward.
He played trumpet on Mike Watt album.
And Flea is on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody assumed immediately, but then I think I remember when that song came out, people were like, no, that's Flea's not on that.
Okay.
That's Frusciante.
Okay. I'm willing to believe
well.
That.
What's cool about that, the choir on there was like, I think I talked about, not on the show, but before.
Yeah. They kind of, he kind of did
it's a
10cc thing.
It's like a noise gate thing. So where he's actually playing the gate and opening. So apparently, from what I understand, it's, they record the choir and everything, but he's not playing the choir as like a sample.
Hmm?
He has that going, but he's playing a noise gate. He opens the gate.
Hmm.
So he plays kind of like to open the gate and then like that choir comes in. So they recorded it. So it's really weird how, it creates that effect with that choir. I forget the name. It's out there, but if you look it up, Starlight Singers or something in that
Starland record. Vocal Band.
Something like that. It's something like that.
But
it was real interesting, like production trick he used on it. He wasn't playing a sample. You know, they recorded the singers.
So it wasn't like he was.
But it gives it that, like he's playing a sample sound, like, but he's like playing it, but he's actually playing, using MIDI to open a noise gate where it's like, it's muted, and then he plays it, and it opens it up.
Sounds like something a genius would do.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's just him. It's a chorus of him.
There's singers on that. It's like a...
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Right on. Anyway, we like John Frusciante a little bit.
Yeah, I do. I'm a big fan.
I do. I like John Frusciante.
Yeah.
And I like Michael, too.
Yeah, I think he's a big reason that...
Steve's kind of weak.
Yeah, Steve Frusciante, he's terrible. Don't listen to his shit. But honestly,
he plays kazoo.
Now, you know, I just thought of something, too, before we go into this next track. There is a Michael Frusciante.
Okay.
He's the guy from Spearhead.
Michael Franti.
Yeah.
Good God, Mike.
Yeah.
Stop making me look bad.
Yeah. Close, but no
close.
Cigar. Anyway, I think the point is check out all of the Chili Peppers solo endeavors instead of the Chili Peppers. Because Flea has a good solo album as well. Anything without... There's a reason there's no solo album from Anthony Kiedis.
God bless America.
Still like Sinatra standards.
Boy.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome.
We cannot be any more blatant.
Let's do a little surgery. What was he saying about the anus?
He smoked the anus.
Popped the anus.
Off the A-list.
Smoked the anus.
Oh, off the A-list. You're right. That is the title hell? Of the song. You're right. I heard something else. I'm sorry.
Oh, I heard God. Smoked the anus.
Smoked the anus. Smoked the anus.
Smoke the yes. devil's anus.
So I saw this band at the 9:30 Club.
Okay.
Guess who they played with?
Butthole Surfers.
Boss Hogg.
Oh.
And nice. What's the other group that's related to them? I can
Spencer.
Never remember.
John Spencer.
John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Okay.
And so this band is kind of bluesy, but they're more, they lean more towards more of a rock sound, but they still have that blues in them. They remind me of like the Stones a little bit too, though.
Okay.
And so anyway, I saw this group. They were the opening act, and I just thought that they were badass live, so I bought the record. I actually had that on vinyl that I got at the show.
Right on.
And just fell in love with them, and I was just like, why don't more people like this group or have heard of this group? They are underrated.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to ask you again. What was the name of the group again?
Surgery.
Surgery. Yeah, I don't know.
Good band
name. The guitar
name.
Sound sounded awesome, though. I love the guitar sound.
Cool. Sounds very much of its time, though. Very 90s.
Yeah. Well, you know.
When did you see the show?
I want to say probably around 94.
Okay. That sounds about the
right
time.
Maybe 93, somewhere around then.
And they opened for?
Boss Hogg,
mm-hmm.
which is John Spencer's wife.
Right.
I forget her name.
Yeah. She was in Pussy Galore with him.
Yeah.
And Free Kitten with Kim Gordon. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Gabriella. No.
That's a lot of, that's a lot of stuff.
Something like that.
I don't know what her name is. But anyway, and then John Spencer's Blues Explosion was the headlining act.
Fantastic. Where was this?
9:30. New 9:30.
New 9:30. Yeah, right on.
John Spencer at 9:30.
Were you there at the
I don't
New
think
Year's
it was
Eve?
That show.
Not the New Year's Eve with Jesus Lizard. And,
I was there with Dave Grohl.
Kinky Afro.
Right hanging out with Dave Grohl.
Yeah, right after Kurt died.
No big deal.
You guys were all like too cool to go talk to Dave Grohl. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. He's on my TV. I'm going to go fucking talk to him. And I drank beers.
Now, Pussy Galore, I didn't really get into. I mean, I
wasn't there.
Yeah.
Lots of people were.
They're probably a band that I could probably listen to now, but I just did not get into them when they were out.
You're talking about Pussy Galore?
Yeah.
Okay.
John Spencer Blues Explosion. When I heard that song, Kinky Afro, I was like, wow.
No shit.
This band is badass. So
they were badass.
Yeah.
Surprising they didn't get bigger.
Yeah, we could have used them too.
But almost kind of like that Kiedis thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did they paint themselves into a corner being so...
A little bit.
I mean, they did it extraordinarily well, but where do you go from there unless you...
Well, again, you have to look at the music, though. They're deeply rooted in the blues music, which is not as popular as rock music.
Right, and it kind of paints you in the corner. So if you don't flirt with any pop sensibility.
Whereas Chili Peppers were funk, these guys were blues.
Right.
Gotta respect that, though.
Oh, it's definitely respect. They were fucking awesome
because they
live
stayed
band. And those
true
records sound
to
great.
What they were, what they are, whatever. Mm. And, yeah.
But I think they had the talent and kind of like, was at least when I saw them live, and the charisma to sit there.
And not have a bass player? Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, lend themselves to even more, you know. Mm-hmm.
If
you get real strict about your discipline, like, no, we only play this type of music, and we're only doing blues, or we're only doing,
funk.
How many prog rock bands were there, you know, from that era, or how many math rock bands, or how many emo bands? And it's like, you can paint yourself in the corner. You got to put some of that shit to the side. It's great that you're really good at that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, kind of like...
It's just what they felt.
No, I know.
That they found their cubby hole, and like Mike said, they kind of dug themselves into that cubby hole, and that's where they stayed.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, but they kind of did the best with what they did. I mean, it wasn't just blues; it was punk rock as well.
Right.
I mean,
it was the punk attitude.
Yeah, with the blues, and then they, you know, from that the album that they had that was big, the one with the radio on the front with the silver cover,
right? The one with Kinky Afro on it.
No, that didn't have Kinky Afro.
Bell Bottoms,
Bell Bottoms and Brenda and shit on that.
That's the album that came out after.
And then after that, they did the another one, and they did an album with R.L. Burnside, an original Delta Blues player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I saw him, I think he opened for him.
No shit.
And they
good show.
Literally shot his career into the stratosphere because
yes.
No one knew who he was except for if you were into the blues.
Right. And then, yeah, he got recognized, like, through,
Possum Records, I think, was the...
But, like, he had, like, a hit, like, on, like, the Sopranos, like, soundtrack or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, the, what was that song?
Every Little Bit Helps.
Yeah, what was that song? Anyway, I'll insert it here. And, yeah. Let's take ourselves a break.
Whatever you want, whatever it is, whatever you want, think Belmont.
If you're considering a new Sanyo stereo, VCR, or TV, there are three very important reasons why you should come to Belmont. Low prices, complete service departments, and one of the largest selections of Sanyo products anywhere in the Washington area. Sanyo, a leader in home electronics for over 20 years, has authorized Belmont to sell and service all our Sanyo products. Come in, you'll see 40-inch big screens, car stereos, personal stereos, TVs and VCRs. Connecting cables, jacks, plugs, literally hundreds of accessories are also in stock for your convenience. And best of all, the staff at Belmont will help you put your new audio-video center together. So choose the best. Belmont and Sanyo. Great names, great products, great values. Come in and find out why, for over 40 years, our customers have been saying,
whatever you want, think Belmont. Whatever you want, think Belmont.
Down to the bar. Let's take a walk. I'll give me a bow.
My bad.
My bad.
Is that enough?
Yeah, it's enough.
Planet Rock meets New Order.
That's a good guess.
Yeah?
That's what it reminds me of.
I don't know anything about this. So you said that's a good guess on Dorsey's part.
Yeah, I like that makes sense because it's like he's kind of picking out the timeline.
Okay.
That's Mr. Flaggio. Uh-huh. Or Flaggio. Or Flaggio. I don't have the accent.
Flaggio.
F-L-A-G-I-O.
Yeah. The song's called Take a Chance.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much Daft Punk in one song 15 years before they ever tried to do it.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
That's when disco died out in America. In Europe, they stayed doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's some Italian disco from 1983.
Nice.
We had already burned our records over here. Pretending we never liked that shit.
Right.
Bee Gees, blah.
Yeah, it's good stuff, but it is lame. Like Foo Fighters are.
No, I love the Bee Gees, dude. I'm being sarcastic.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
But this is Saturday Night Fever Part 2 had come out in the United States and flopped. And people were like, no, we're done with that shit. When we went to the baseball game, we burned up all our disco records. It was 10 Cent Beer Night. There was a riot. We hate this stuff now. Mm-hmm. None of us ever liked it. Mm-hmm. And it's bullshit. You did like it because it was really good.
Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Those that burn bright burn fast. That was disco, at least in the United States.
I'd say
in Italy they stayed doing.
They
that
might have had a 6-year run,
right?
With disco,
yeah, and disco, yeah. In
but
America.
By 1983, it was dead over here.
Right.
They stayed doing it, so that was the precursor. Yeah, that was before like. The rave stuff started happening, and techno happened, and the rave stuff started over in Europe.
Now, technically, black people were still doing disco, because from disco came hip-hop.
Okay. It's like, but hip-hop wasn't disco.
Like
me, that's more like George Benson type of stuff, like chicka-ching, ching, chicka-ching.
Or Chic.
Right, where you had a little bit of that, but that wasn't.
Yeah, but how many people sampled that song, that one song that Chic did, though, that was like.
So many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Ching, 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 ching.
Or how about this? Let's dance. Ching,
ching, ching. Right.
That's basically Nile Rodgers.
Yeah, and everybody was like kind of even the Stones navigated disco, like the Some Girls album. Was that the one?
Shadoube. Shattered.
Yeah,
Shattered.
Right.
Miss you.
The Rod Stewart stuff. And it was like, they all flirted with elements of it because it was like the popular thing. It's like, I got to get in on this and stay relevant.
Yeah.
And find a way to navigate it.
And I thought it was pretty good, like you said. I mean,
but just like pure disco, by 1983, it was
in America,
done.
It was dead.
Yeah, it was done.
But in Europe.
Yeah, and it kind of got like quirky and cheesy and like, really weird, but it's just like that's gives it all this charm, and it's like kind of like, and that's all the stuff, and that's a good example of the stuff that 15 years later Daft Punk was just like, we'll do that stuff.
Yeah, well,
a lot of it.
Well, one of the guys in Daft Punk, his dad was very much
right in that,
one of those
like a DJ producer type of guy. So
musician,
he had access to all that stuff, and was like, so
he just waited on the right time to unleash it on the public.
I don't even know. It's like, but that scene, it's just kind of like went kind of dormant worldwide. But while it was dormant, there was these pockets in Europe where it was like festering and getting really distilled, and then you had like. Pure house music and the techno and all that stuff was getting ready to come. And this is kind of like.
All that came from disco, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is that point in between that stuff. This was what kind of bridged it before you got to any of that stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jesus Christ, you've got. Okay, the guy is still doing disco in Europe. And then you have hip hop happen.
Right.
Like in the late 70s, early 80s. And then you have the DJs still spinning the fucking disco shit. And then you get house.
Right.
Which is basically fucking Euro disco again.
Right.
Reintroducing that shit to America.
Right.
Wow.
And the worst part of it was that New Jack Swing.
That has nothing to do with it.
It's like before you even got all that side stuff, it was like underground, no, like kind of club
music. That came from disco,
music.
Though.
Yeah, there was people out in Europe going to these nightclubs listening to like these dance tracks, and like no new records were coming out of America, which would, they originally relied on.
Just like when Rusty went to Europe.
Right.
And
got a beret.
European vacation.
Yes, I fucking love European vacation. That's underrated. We should just watch, we should delete all of this and just watch Europe and just do a commentary watching European vacation.
Yes.
What a stupid, yeah. Just stupid hat, Dad.
Lusty. Good song, man.
They're gonna poke.
Good song. Let's go out on this. This was a song that we discovered. We were talking. We were me and Mike are on a group text with our friend Matt Drake, and somehow we came upon the idea of Bitch House, and
she's a bitch.
House,
like, yeah, if Bitch House.
I've heard of the subgenre Witch House, and I just decided it'd be funny to say
Kevin
Bitch
said
House.
He produces exclusively Bitch House music.
So right.
And I Googled, I YouTubed, I was like, I bet there is something already called Bitch House. He was joking,
mm-hmm.
but kind of wanting to be serious at the same time. He's like, oh, I'm on to something here. And then I was like, I don't know. I think Bitch House is already a thing.
Right. And so you looked it up.
So I looked up Bitch House. I just typed in Bitch House. Is there a genre already established as Bitch House
right.
music?
And this is what we found.
Here it is. Thanks for listening. Before we go, I'm going to say that by the time you listen to this episode, I am going to be on an episode of the Guitar Gurus, Southern Maryland Guitar Gurus. Look that podcast up. I'm going to be the first in-studio guest. Check it out. Andy, do you have anything going on?
Play Raid Shadow Legends.
There you go. Check him out on Raid Shuttle Legends. Is that what? Is that correct?
Shadow Legends.
Check them out. Mike, are you playing any games online that you want to invite people to?
No.
You prefer to be alone. No. Right on.
All by
Well.
That's underrated.
Thanks for joining us again, Mike. Finish this.
Part two.
Yeah, part two yep. of overrated, underrated, and I think we did the best we could with this open-ended subject. But right on, man. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time. This is Bitch House.
Kevin, that's nasty.
It's ratchet as fuck, and it's awesome.
Awesome.